Welcome to B2B Podcast Stories, brought to you by GHM Marketing. Our guest today is Mick Hawes, CEO of Builders Business Black Belt and host of the Toolshed Podcast. Mick is a number one best-selling author and coach, helping builders boost productivity, profitability, and enjoy the fruits of their labor with more time freedom. Today, expect to learn the importance of having a clear purpose for your podcast and the significance of aligning podcast content with the challenges and aspirations of your target audience. Discover the unique advantages of both interview-based and solo podcast formats. Explore Mick's commitment to continuous learning and growth, exemplified through having coaches and community support. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you're listening to the podcast. It really helps the show, and we're going to keep bringing you amazing guests and stories about all the different ways podcasting can help your business. And with that, here's Mick Hawes.
Mick, why did you start the Toolshed Podcast? Tell me a bit about that story.
I'd been podcasting for quite a few years, and the Toolshed Podcast, I think, is podcast number 3 or 4, maybe 3. And it took me a while to figure out the purpose of the podcast. And we still do 2 podcasts, but they have very different purposes. And the Toolshed Podcast is to really reach out and to be able to capture information, tools, techniques, ideas, philosophies from people who are very successful in the building industry and push it out to the other people in the industry, but also be able to tap into the circles of influence or the databases of these people who have lots of builders on their database so they can become aware of us as well. So it's a 2-pronged thing. Like, we really endeavor to deliver high quality content that's useful, but we also want to use our guests' databases as a way to become, I suppose, more known.
Love that. So several purposes. So we're going to get back to those, because obviously super interested into understanding how you link the podcast with the business and what was the thought process to get there, saying, hey, actually, it would be a great idea to connect with thought leaders and influencers in my niche, in my industry, so their audience gets aware of us, but also the whole format behind the podcast. But let's take a small step back. I'm interested into understanding how many podcasts you had before starting the Toolshed to really show that it's an iteration, an iterative process. So what was the very first podcast you launched?
It was called Small Business Smart Solutions. If you Google it, it's probably still available. and it demonstrates how easy it is to lose your way doing that podcast, because I got approached by an organization in the United States, and they were a distribution type scenario where they would promote the podcast, they would find sponsors for the podcast, and they had an education process because their roots were in radio. So every week I would have a coaching session from the coach about how to do a podcast, but learning from radio techniques, radio announcer techniques, interviewing techniques, and so on and so forth, which was a great thing to do. But when I stepped back from it, and I did it for something like 18 months, and it took me quite a number of hours each week to produce this podcast, because I had to find a guest, had to prepare the guest, had to interview the guest, and then I did all of the editing and so forth, and the sponsors ads and what have you, and we built it and built it and built it, and it became quite a successful podcast, except I was getting back then somewhere around 8,000 downloads per week for the podcast in America, where we had no interest in developing or generating leads. I was just so into the process, and it seemed like it was successful because I was looking at the numbers, and we were climbing and climbing and climbing all of the time, and looking at our numbers compared to other similar podcasts, and we were absolutely smashing it. But when I stood back and asked myself what the purpose of it was, there really wasn't a purpose. As I said, I don't regret it, because I learned so much about the production and all parts of creating a podcast, and met a lot of great people. Some people I'm still connected to now, so you can't discount that. You do make some really cool connections doing a podcast.
That's awesome. But so that company that approached you, what was their role exactly? Just finding you the sponsors? Because I would have thought they would be doing the production as well, but that you were taking care of. So what did they do exactly? What was their strategy? What was their added value?
Well, to make my podcast successful and increase the downloads, increase the sponsorship, but I had to pay them, and their job was to get sponsors, and the initial objective was to the sponsorship income basically neutralized my fee to get all of the coaching and all of the resources that they were giving me. And then eventually it was to be a profitable podcast because of the additional sponsorship it would generate from being successful. Before it got to that, I pulled the pin on it because it would have been okay for it to be financially successful through sponsorship, but it was a lot of hours each week for potentially what I would have been paid versus doing a podcast that resonates with the people that we're trying to reach and bring into our business and become clients. So it was, I've been known to be a slow learner, and that was, took me 18 months to get that lesson.
I mean, that's a very interesting journey. So obviously I want to get into the details of the podcast that resonates with the people you are trying to help with your business, because that's all we are about at GHA Marketing and the B2B podcast series. But I think there are some lessons to be learned here and some interesting takeaways for podcasters who are also, once they've nailed down the niche and their podcast, on how to actually grow and make a podcast that successful. So what are the three things you learned from those people on how to get close to 8,000 downloads a week and how to make a podcast successful? Like, did you get into conversations where they would teach you how to do that? And what are the three biggest things you've learned, three best things that you're still applying, for instance, now in your podcast?
Yeah, I think the biggest things that I learned, and it's hard to identify three, but the biggest things that I learned were just about how to have conversations with people in the podcast. If it is an interview style podcast, and I say that because the other one we've got isn't an interview style podcast. It's, I just hit the record button and it's just me. But that's a different purpose. Maybe we can talk about that later. But if you are doing an interview podcast, it is, even though it is your show, people aren't necessarily there to listen to you, but it is your responsibility to deliver something that is interesting. So you don't necessarily just ask a question and let them ramble on and on like I might be right now. You may sometimes need to interject and cut them short and keep the conversation moving so it is fast-paced. And if it is a live podcast, that is even more important. And that's, I guess, what they used to teach because it came from a radio background. In the case of a recorded podcast, of course, you can go back and pull the boring bits out and cut and shut and make it really punchy. But it's so important to understand the content that you're creating from the listener or the consumer's point of view, because it, particularly in this day and age, people just want you to get to it. They don't want to listen to long, drawn out stuff. They need, they want to get the information. They want to be entertained, but they want to get the information quickly. And if you're waffling on, and the guest is speaking really slowly and there's lots of gaps and ums and ahs and all of that sort of stuff, it can be quite painful to listen to. So you're kind of the symphony conductor in a way, where you're really making sure that the tempo and the pace of what's going on is at a certain level, and you maintain that. At the same time, you've got to make the guest feel comfortable, make the guest feel like you're interested in what they're talking about. So it's a bit of a juggling act. It takes a little while to get comfortable with that, and it doesn't always work. Like, I've had some episodes that afterwards I've just gone, delete.
Oh, really? Oh, so that's interesting. We've never done that with the two shows we have, about 260 episodes combined. How do you come around with that, Mick? Because I'm sorry, we're taking so many tangents here. It's just amazing. I love it. We have, so on the first show we have, we interview finance professionals, like high-level finance professionals. And we reached a point where, I mean, those are people who would bill tremendous amount of money per hour to, like, just get into a coaching session or get into a, you know, a one-to-one or like a meeting, whatsoever you call it, the way you want. Taking about 45, 60 minutes of their time to interview them, and then coming up afterwards saying, hey, sorry, but this really doesn't stick to our brand, we're not going to release it. It's a tough battle. So how do you, because I imagine when you reach 8,000 downloads a week, you probably start interviewing this type of people as well. How do you come around saying to a guest who've taken time out of their day to read the script, to probably do a pre-brief interview with you, to do the whole interview, and then say, sorry, I'm going to have to delete that. That's painful.
It hasn't happened that much. And we do our podcast in a certain way, the interview version anyway, the Toolshed version, where we do it on video. That always gets put out because that just goes out on social media as a video. And we use Restream platform to do that. If it's too difficult or it just hasn't got the vibe to make it interesting listening, we don't bother putting it into the production team where they edit it and put the ads and all of that sort of stuff. And it just never gets to that level. So it gets It does go out, but it doesn't go as the audio-only podcast. And as I said, it's very rare.
Yeah, okay, fair. Well, if it happens only once every so often. Okay, makes sense. So let's get to the meat of the sausage. As one of my former Irish manager used to say, podcast that resonates with people. So when did you do the shift from, okay, I'm actually having a killer podcast that is getting tons of downloads, that is big enough to get sponsors, because it's like, when you look at it, it's still a very small proportion of podcasts that have a sponsor that make the podcast profitable even. So how do you get from there to, okay, I'd rather have something much smaller, but much more targeted, much more beneficial to my business? What's the shift?
The shift came when I subscribe to a podcast coach, and I've got coaches for everything. I've just told you, I've got a health coach and just went to New Zealand, and both he and I got COVID. I've got a financial coach. I've got coaches in all sorts of different spaces. So a podcast coach, you know, I just had to have a podcast coach. And he helped me to understand about really getting to the purpose of your podcast. Like, what really is it? And it's different for everybody. So just because this is the purpose for my podcast doesn't mean everyone should have the same purpose. But my purpose, rightly or wrongly, for me is to generate leads. It's not like I have a mission to help significantly change the building industry in our country, because there's lots of problems. But I can't change the building industry by my words on a podcast. What I can do is gather leads, get them into our coaching system where we teach them how to build a better business, and use them as examples of what you can create under all sorts of different economical circumstances and challenges like COVID and what have you. Under all those circumstances, we can prove to you, you can build a better building business. But that all comes through the training. And so in my mind, I knew that the podcast was an integral part. In fact, a critical part of our lead generation process to do that. So with any marketing, I believe you've got to understand exactly the purpose of each part of your marketing. So if it's a top of funnel thing, you know that it's creating awareness. If it's a middle funnel thing, you know that it's creating authority. If it's a bottom of funnel thing, it's giving them a call to action, to take action, to enter your ecosystem. And so your content will vary based on knowing what the purpose of each part of your marketing funnel or plan is. And if you know that clearly, you can create the content specifically for that purpose, and it will be more successful.
Wow. Lots of golden nuggets into this. Mick, I want to unpack so many things, because obviously we talked before, our agency is all about podcasts and generating leads with podcasts. So obviously what you're saying right now resonates a lot with me, but I'm interested into understanding the why as well a bit. What's behind that mission? Why is it so important for you to build a better building community and industry in your country? So for the people who haven't noticed about Mick's accent, we are talking about which country, Mick, exactly?
Australia.
You name it. So why that mission? Why is it important to you?
Well, I've done a lot of personal development and reading and listening. And some time ago, I came across Simon Sinek, Start With Why. And then the follow-up book was Find Your Why. And then there was The Infinite Game. And part of The Infinite Game, he talks about your just cause, you know. And I was thinking a lot about that. And it just, the why that I found was, for whatever reason, I don't know whether I was dropped on my head when I was a baby or whatever caused it, but I have an absolute desire to help somebody if they are experiencing unnecessary pain. And the underline must go under unnecessary. If you have to go through a painful situation to learn a lesson, and it's kind of the only way you can learn the lesson, I'm just going to let you experience the pain, because that's what has to happen. But in the building industry, there is lots of unnecessary pain because of the industry norms, the way that builders are taught, the way they're educated, the systems and processes that are thought to be the best way of going about building a building business, how you treat your clients, how you treat your subcontractors, how you treat your team and all of that. And so much of it is fundamentally flawed. And so my dad was a builder, and I saw what he built, and I saw how he built his team, and they were just all really good people. And when I stood back from it, I was a business coach before this, and I was business coaching all sorts of small businesses, but I might have had a hairdresser and a trucking company and a radio station and a bank and all of that in my membership at the time. And I just seemed to get on well with builders. And when I decided to niche, because that's what I was telling everybody else to do as a business coach, you should niche. And it's like the blinding flash of the obvious to me was that small business isn't a niche. And so I ended up getting a business coach that specialized in coaching business coaches, as you do. And he helped me niche our business. But one of the considerations was that I wanted to work in an industry, or I wanted to have a niche where the business's customers were drawn to them because of a want, not a need. And I fundamentally went on the Google and found a website that listed every single small business there was on the planet. Not every single small business, but the types of small business, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, that sort of thing. And I just went down this list of 2,400 businesses and just highlighted the ones that their customers come to them because of a want. So a golf professional, their customers go to them because they want to be a better golfer. And that was one of my considerations, like get into that space, teaching golf professionals how to build a business, because their customers are sent to them because of a want. And when they go to them because of a want, it's all about building relationships and trust and all that cool stuff. If you're an electrician or a plumber, people reach out to you because they need to. And I didn't want to work with businesses where the customer came to them because of a need, like because it's more transactional. I need you to come and if you're a plumber, I need you to come to my house because my toilet's blocked. I need you, or my power's out. So you're an electrician, I need you. But if you're a builder, I want to build this new home. I want to build this renovation. I want to build this extension. It's very exciting. And another thing is that builders, I think, are so underrated with their contribution to society. Like builders create either healthy homes or homes that can cause illness. They can build homes that bring families together or keep them apart, all in the design. And, that they contribute so much to our memories and our lives. It's just a super powerful industry to be involved with. I was a tradesman myself on the tools as an electrician when I was younger, and I just vibe with them. Like I just get on so well with all of the builders. A lot of them are really politically incorrect and say lots of inappropriate things, and I just love it.
Man, just a quick anecdote on my side. We recently had Jeff Sample on the show. He's one of the hosts of the Comtech crew. If you don't know it, I invite you to check. Anyways, my point being, you're the second person I talked to that is in the building / construction industry. And the way you describe the industry, every time it gets me, it's like, it's really full of passionate people. And I know everybody in every industry will say this, like, yes, we are passionate about this. Yeah, of course. But like, there is really, the way you describe it, there is heart in it. And the thing that you say, like you build memories by building a house that get a family together. I'm like, wow, that's going to be the quote of the show. So absolutely love it. And it's interesting to see the way builders and construction people talk about their industry and their job. It's really like a job of passion. I'm quite impressed, actually. Mick, why do you have so many coaches? What is it about it?
I guess because I'm lazy.
Which is a good reason.
Well, it's kind of half serious because you can invest so much time trying to learn stuff. And if you're trying to teach yourself stuff by gathering information, trying to sort the dirt from the gold, not only does it take a lot of time, but then you've got to add time to experiment and measure and test to find out what works and what doesn't. And I guess by being a little bit lazy, I'd just rather go to someone who's really experienced in it and saying, how do I build a better business as a business coach to a coach who specializes in coaching business coaches. Like I could have gone to just a business coach, but they don't specialize in coaching business coaches. I could go to the doctor for my health, but they don't specialize in health. They focus on illness. So I went to a coach who specializes in health. And so they're looking at everything that contributes to health. I wanted a successful podcast, so go to a podcast coach.
Amen. So would you say that you're having so many coaches because it's a hack to learn faster, basically? And I like to talk about people who have more money than time available. And a coach is a way to say, hey, look, you've probably done the dozens of years, because that's what it really takes. Like, to become an expert in a field, it's not in hours, it's not in days, it's not in months, it's in years. And if it's in dozens of years, it's even better. Yeah. Like, okay, you've built the experience to actually be very knowledgeable about this niche and this kind of need and this type of process and this type of business. Can you help me get there in a much shorter time frame? Is it what it is all about?
Well, being a coach or being coached, I think the answer is kind of the same. It is about getting there faster. But I'm also, like, the majority of the coaches that I have communities as well. And so it's a two-edged sword. Both edges are of benefit. And getting direction and being able to run things by the coach, who's normally a very smart dude with lots of experience, is one thing. But the other thing is being able to tap into the community. And if you're in a community of business coaches, well, you know, every problem that could have ever been had is probably inside that group, and a solution is already available. I've got a wealth coach that has a community. So I sit in with conversations and listen to what their problems are, but also the solutions that are given to overcome those problems. And I learn a bunch just by going and listening. Now, I try to contribute as well, but you just learn a lot from being in a community. The same with the health coach. You know, we were over in New Zealand last weekend in a big group of people, and it was just great listening to how people have overcome certain challenges that I probably haven't even met yet. So I know that in the future, the answer to the challenge that I will face in the future will be in that community. So it's very powerful. Yeah.
How many coaches do you have, Mick? Do people want to know?
Well, I guess health, wealth, podcast, business, that would be the four currently. But, like, there have been many, many in the past, you know. Speed reading coach in the past.
So you've probably read the book How to Read Fast. I think that's the name of it. No, I read it in French, but anyways.
Yeah, I can't remember. We ended up creating a little business out of it. It's this whole weird story where I got the speed reading guy, and this is down in Tasmania, the little island at the bottom of Australia, where I live, and our kids had been taught by this guy, and it was miraculous. Like, they tripled their speed in just a couple of sessions, and comprehension went up. So I wanted everybody in our group, our clients, to learn this. So I put a little seminar on, he taught it, and then I'll invite the public, see if I can make an extra dollar out of it at the same time. So I put an ad in the newspaper about the speed reading, and away we went. And then that went out, and I got a phone call from a television station who runs a current affairs show. So it's like a show where they, you know, chase after dodgy builders and, you know, scammers and this, that, and the other, and all of that, the current affairs. And they wanted to shoot a story on this, on this speed reading thing. So they came down and they shot the story. They tried to turn it into a scam story, but this guy was the real deal. And normally he does an hour session to double people's speeds, but they booked him into a school with these girls' school, and they had, like, television cameras in their face asking them, what did you just read about? And all that, like, putting pressure on these kids. And they said, well, I read about this, and the lady was wearing a red dress, and blah, blah, blah. And everybody they'd interviewed had either doubled or tripled their speed in 20 minutes, which is a third of the time that it normally takes him. So instead of them turning it into a scam story, they turned it into this look what we've found story, like a discovery story. So, long story short, we'd forgotten about it because the time zone difference between Tasmania and the mainland meant that it didn't come on our TVs at the normal time. And we were just sitting, I was sitting at home after it went to air on the mainland Australia, and my phone started ringing and going, where can we learn this? And I'm, what are you talking about? And we had something like 650 emails in the first hour, and my phone bank, message bank got blocked up and what have you. And I thought, well, we've got to take advantage of this. So I started telling people, yes, there is a course. It's X amount of dollars. You know, we can take your credit card information and we'll send it out to you. But with the backlog, it's going to take about 2 weeks. And we didn't even have a course. So I just built this database real quick and started getting everyone's information. And the first course went out to people within, I think, 10 days. So we record, and this was back in the day of CDs and all of this sort of stuff. But it was pretty interesting. Even the host of the television station rang up and said, can I have one of those courses? So you have coaches for everything.
It's an extra dollar, right? It's quite a good operation, Mick. I have a last question on the coaches. And I mean, I know we are quite on a tangent compared to the Toolshed podcast, but we're going to get back to podcasts. And I also want to emphasize the importance of like surrounding yourself with knowledgeable people who can actually help you fast track whatever you're trying to do. Because especially when it comes to business, speed is everything. So my question to you, Mick, is how do you find a good coach?
I guess referral. But at the end of the day, it's suck it and see. Like you've got to go and jump in and experience it. But in this day and age, you can generally speak to somebody or a number of people who are either in or have been in that program. I think most people these days are pretty switched on with being able to identify quite quickly whether this is the right fit for them, whether the person is congruent or not, you know, what sort of content have they got out on the interwebs, and you know, if they're putting up the big paywall and they're just sort of teasing you all of the time, generally that's a sign to me that I think they're just going to want to sell to me for the whole time. Whereas when they're giving you their best stuff and they're not hiding anything at all on the free side of things, so you can see it on the YouTube or any sort of social media, and it's proper, meaty information, I think they're generally really congruent and are probably a good bet to jump onto.
I like what you're saying here in the sense that it very much feels like, hey, the people who are willing to give a lot first, that's who you, because A, they know what they're talking about. If there is so much content out there, you have time to do your due diligence and watch a couple of videos, check the website, check some articles, some interviews. Eventually, you're like, okay, those guys are serious. But also, if they are giving so much for free, imagine what you would potentially be getting if you become a paid customer. So I like that a lot. And then trial and error makes sense, because sometimes you'll just go for it and you figure out that, okay, it was probably not the right call, but hey, let's try and iterate again.
And it doesn't matter if you give away your best stuff, it just doesn't matter, because with my paid clients, I give them my best stuff and I have to repeat and I have to hold their hand and I have to measure, and we have to do so much to get that information implemented and change their habits and change their minds. You can put it out there. I think somebody said, you know, everything that I teach is available, you know, in the old days, in the library, but you still got to go to the library and you got to get a library card. And then, but you know, you're still only getting the information. I said to one of our guys today, like, if you said you wanted to be a golf professional and I gave you the best 100 books on golf and you consumed them all and you knew everything, I could take you out onto the golf course that very first day and I'd still probably beat you, because you've got to do the physical practice to change the habits, to get the muscle memory, all of those sorts of things. So I'm happy to give anybody my best information, all my information, because they're probably not going to use it anyway.
Amen. A thing we love at GHA Marketing, and with my co-founder Hussam, and actually it was our philosophy even before GHA Marketing, is give the design for free, sell the implementation. Because in any case nowadays, especially with all the information that there is out there, all the competition, in any case, people will find the information if they really want it. And if you're about to sell them whatever product you're looking at, but like multiple $1,000 kind of product or services, people will do their due diligence and people will do the research. The value is not only, there is something about being knowledgeable, obviously, but the value is in executing and how well you execute that. And all the startup gurus will say accurately, like, the ideas don't matter. What matters is the execution behind it. How do you actually bring the product to life? How do you execute? How do you deliver to your clients? How do you do this? I like the example of the golf course. Yeah, you have all the knowledge in the world, but now what about muscle memory? What about when you hit the golf ball like this, it reacts differently than if you hit it like that? And in reality, knowing what the club does doesn't mean exactly how to, you know, how to hit the ball with it.
That's right. And then that's only the first level of learning how to hit the ball. Now I'm going to play you. I'm going to play you for money. Now there's a level of competition. So I have to calm my mind to be able to go back to all that I've learned. That's the second level. And then the third level might be now I'm on the first tee in front of a huge big grandstand full of, you know, 10,000 people.
Wow. Do you golf, Mick?
Used to. These days it just does spoil a good walk.
So did you have a golf coach by any chance?
I did.
somehow makes sense. Mick, let's get back to lead generation with podcast. Super interested into digging into this. So you hire this podcast coach. You read the Simon Sinek, Start With The Why, Find Your Why, Infinite Game. I loved those name dropping because those really relates to what we do. What's your kind of, I can say it, it's my podcast, oh shit moment? And I'm like, I should not be aiming for 1,000 downloads a week, but I should be aiming to generating leads with my podcast for my business to actually bring even more value and fulfill that mission that I have, which is helping the building industry in my country. So how do you generate leads with your podcast?
The first key is to find a guest that they have a database of our clients, so builders, people in the building industry, but they and I have no competitive overlap. So then I can congruently invite them onto the podcast. And having said that, like another coaching company, so we did have competitive overlap, but they were great, you know, and they're great people, and I don't care because people will either vibe with me or vibe with them. I don't care. People will find who they need to find and will hook up with whoever they want to hook up with, whoever's the best fit. But traditionally, it's finding somebody who is in the building industry in some way, shape or form, that their database is full of builders and we have no competitive overlap. I can then broaden their reach by putting them in front of all of our connections, the subscribers to the podcast, on our email list, on our social platforms and so forth. And I can congruently promote their existence. I don't have to necessarily say these people are the best people since sliced bread. Please make sure you sign up with them or go and visit them or whatever. But I can just say, you've heard what they've said. If this resonates with you, here is the link to their website, or here is the link to have a conversation or whatever it might be. And so I can genuinely promote them, build their awareness. So they're very happy about that. And at the same time, I put it out on a platform called Restream. So it's a syndication type of platform. And what it does is it allows me to upload a file, or I could do it live, but we upload a video file and set the event up, and I schedule it for a few days' time, and then it generates a link that I can send to the podcast guest, and it gives the Restream platform permission by the podcast guest to broadcast onto their social platform. So if they've got LinkedIn and Facebook and YouTube and what have you, our conversation will go out on their social platforms as well. And so by using that platform, when I set up the event, everybody gets a notification that this, I'm going to be speaking to so-and-so about such and such on this day. If they're interested, they can press a button. And then they get another reminder when it's about to go live, and then they can watch it. And then it stays on everybody's social platforms as a replay. It then goes to our podcast production team, and they turn it into an audio-only podcast. And then I send the guest the link to that as well. And, of course, they want to promote it because it's promoting them. So it's a real win-win. Like there's no losers. There's no manipulation. There's nothing like that. It's just a real, I think, symbiotic relationship is the right term, but I could be wrong.
No, sounds like it. It's a very interesting system. So the Restream platform, you actually don't stream it live. It's kind of a...
You can if you want to.
Okay. Do you do that?
I have done in the past, and that, in fact, that's how I used to do it. So, but there are so many things that I needed to line up. So you needed to turn up on time. You needed to make sure all your equipment was working. And we'd get all of that right, and I'd go bing and hit the button, and something would go wrong, and we wouldn't be streaming live, you know. So I just found this way was bulletproof, because now I can be a lot more flexible about your diary, so we can meet and just record it on our own time. If needed, if the phone rings or someone fell off their chair or whatever during the interview, you could edit it out and upload the edited video if you want, but I would probably leave that in because it would be hilarious. But yeah, you've got that option. So you can do it live or record it.
One of the interests that I saw in kind of the webinar format, right, is, well, it has its drawbacks. For me, is the fact that you can be less intimate with the guest. You can be less spontaneous. It's much more scripted. Usually the guests, especially if they have not been on many podcasts, they are speakers, depending on what you do. But they would always like to ensure a certain level of control. And the fact of being live kind of gets in the middle of that. The way you approach it is perfect. But then the drawback to that is usually the pros of webinars is you have people reacting live, sometimes asking questions, and you can interact with the audience, with the community following you. Have you found a workaround that, or how do you do this?
With the recorded one, which is the interview podcast, you get comments from time to time and you can interact with those comments. But you're right, it's fundamentally somebody watching a video. And that's okay, because, you know, there's a call to action in it and there's some links in it to come and join the tool shed, our environment, which is free and all of that sort of stuff. And that's okay. When people join the tool shed, that's when our second podcast comes in, and that is live. And so that happens at the same time, same day, every week. And people inside that community get a notification that it's live. So I do have the opportunity to take digital comments, so through the chat, about what their comments are, and you know, they say g'day and all of that sort of stuff, so we can interact, and they do ask questions and make comments and all that, so that's pretty cool. But that's the purpose of that podcast is very different from the one that we've been talking about. That is very much an educational podcast, and its purpose is to, I guess, elevate my status as an authority and get the people listening to it, have a conversation with us to see if one of our paid programs is the right fit for them. So that's middle of funnel marketing.
Yeah, the authority point that you were mentioning. So let's dive a little bit deeper into this. So can you break down for us this middle funnel, end of funnel, beginning / top of funnel? What are the different strategies for podcasters depending on what you want to achieve with a lead generating podcast?
Well, I mean, the way that I understand it, and I do not want to position myself in any way, shape or form as a marketing expert, because nothing could be further from the truth. I've learned a lot about it and I understand a bit about it, but I wouldn't call myself an expert. But what I do understand, and it makes sense to me, is that if you divide your funnel into three parts, that and you create the content appropriately, it works better. So each part, you need to understand its function and then create the content in such a way that it makes sense. And the very top of the funnel is just awareness. So we call that TOF, top of funnel. And it's just all about awareness. And the purpose of the content is to get somebody to turn their head towards you in a very noisy environment. Like, there are messages, I don't know how many thousands of messages we're presented with on a daily basis. And so you've got to find your way through that noise and yell out their name somehow. And when they hear their name in a crowded room, they go, oh, who said that? And they turn around and they look. And so with that top of funnel stuff, it needs to be content that is really resonating with their current fears, frustrations, wants and aspirations. What is keeping them up at night? What do they think about when they first wake up? What are their problems? What are their challenges? And you don't need to yell out the solution or the answer to their problem. You need to yell out the problem. And that's the only purpose of this top of funnel stuff, is to turn their head in a very noisy environment. And that may take a little while to yell out their name a number of times. So it's not about putting one podcast out or one post out that is talking about some sort of their specific problem. You've got to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, because there has to be that many touch points before they see it. And they may see it and still not turn their head. But after a while, they'll go, why does this person keep yelling out my name? And they'll stop and they'll have a listen. And then that's the middle of funnel. So the call to action is to get them to look, to be aware of your existence. Once they're aware of your existence and start to consume your content, then we're now into the middle of the funnel. And what you need to do is elevate your status in their mind as an authority. So the secret there is to now develop content that really gets into the detail of their understanding of their own problems. So they feel that you understand their problems at least as well as they do, if not better. And again, you still don't need to deliver solutions or answers, because someone who has their problem understood by somebody else, or believe that that other person understands it at an even deeper level than they do, will assume that they have the solution and want the solution. So it's a very rapport building, authority elevating exercise. But again, we're not talking about how good I am and or any of that. We're just talking about their problems and how those problems create these problems. And what those how those problems affect. So you're going to two or three levels of depth with their problem. So they go, yeah, that's what I think. Yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah, yep. And they really understand. And then we then move into the bottom of the funnel, which is the call to action. And that could be, in our case, well, it is in our case, join the tool shed. And then you can just allude to, there are many, many answers and solutions in this environment, and it's for free. So it's the call to action. So I've created awareness at the top of the funnel. I've created authority in the middle of the funnel. And at the bottom of the funnel, I've given them a call to action and a very lubricated, frictionless pathway to take that action. And then, of course, you've got to deliver.
Yeah, but it helps. It's better if you do. So I love that. To put a bit of podcast vibes into this, I'd like to take a typical use case of not necessarily ourselves, but like typically what we would implement for our client, or what we would recommend people do to do exactly what you explained with the podcast. The great thing with the podcast is that I think it's an amazing mid-funnel asset. Like, to establish authority, it's perfect. The way you do it, Mick, is you reach out to thought leaders and to influencers in your niche, in your country. And that's perfect, because not only do you put great content out there with great insights, you also establish a relationship with the thought leaders and you make yourself visible with those people. And as a consequence, you also make their audience aware of your existence and establish yourself as an authority. The way we would typically do it is this podcast content, we're going to repurpose it into smaller pieces of content that are going to be the top of the funnel at the very entry level. We're going to publish this on any platforms. Again, it's not any additional content. It's snippets picked out of the very podcast episode that we put everywhere to get through that noise, to identify snippets that solve a very problem or that pinpoint a very problem and say, hey, you can have this, 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 and that problem. And then boom, you make people aware of yourself. You get them to listen to your podcast, and then you direct them towards where your call to action is. Typically for you, it will be the free community, Mick. For us, it's an ebook. For any other people, it's a free call or a free discovery, whatever it is. That's the power of podcasts, and that's how it can generate leads very efficiently. Because not only do you establish yourself as an authority, but all the environment around your podcast can be that whole funnel. Love that. You mentioned something else earlier, Mick, that I didn't want to leave out. Interview versus non-interview formats and podcast. So what's your view on this? What's your view on, because you've done both, I believe, interview-based podcasts.
Yeah, well, I do both. Still do both, yeah.
You do, okay. So walk us through that. What's the difference? What are the pros and cons of each? How would you, and what's your favorite?
Yeah, I don't really have a favorite, and they both have pros and cons. But I do both because they both have, for me, very different purposes. So the Toolshed podcast is an interview podcast, and we've gone through the purpose for that. It is to create connection to a larger reach and generate leads to come and join us in the Toolshed. The other podcast is just me talking about a specific problem, and it delivers high quality information. Again, I'm not scared to give my best stuff in this podcast. So, you know, I'm here to help. We get clients because they go, that made so much sense to me, but I just don't feel that I can do it, or I need your guidance or whatever to help me to do it. They get this sense that just the information isn't enough. They need the community, and they need the system to be able to implement that stuff. So I'm not really answering your question the way you asked it, but the pros and cons to both of the podcasts. The cons to me for the interview is finding the people. But again, we're just currently building a system now where we're getting a virtual assistant to be able to find, contact, prepare the guests. And all I'll be doing is doing the interview. And then it gets sent away and it gets all chopped up and marketed and what have you. The second one, where it's just me talking, is I can go in the direction that I want to go in. And when I do that, I tend to get really, really passionate because I know what I'm talking about. And I know that if you get this, it's going to make a massive difference. And so I can go into great detail about how to implement something and really make a lot of value, or give a lot of value in a 30 or 40 minute conversation, to give something that can be implemented straight away. And you get really good comments, so you get good feedback from it straight away. So it kind of strokes the ego a bit, I suppose, or contributes to my need for significance and things like that. And it's easier because I'm just speaking from my deep knowledge, and there's a lot less moving parts than doing the interview one. But I think that for a podcast where its purpose is to spread or create awareness, I think an interview podcast is a better option, because I think it's just more interesting listening to two people having a conversation than one person waffle on.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
I see the benefits of doing like just yourself, but I'm in love too much with the interview format. Like, you get to, even on the personal level, you write significance need, but also just like fulfillment, learning, like out of each conversation you learn something. I just love that so much.
Yeah, and there's no reason you can't do both. I mean, you can learn with that one and you can teach with the other one. I mean, it's all about give and get. So
that's actually very true. And so, do you get those two types of episodes out on the same podcast, or do you have one dedicated for interview-based podcast and one for non-interview-based?
Yeah, so one's the Toolshed is dedicated for the interview-based one, and then we've got the we don't really have a name for it. I think it's called the Builder's Business Success Podcast, because it's an internal podcast. It doesn't go out into the public. It's only the people who are in the Toolshed environment. So that's a free environment. You can join it for free. And there's lots of other builders in there. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of builders in there. So you can go in there, ask questions, share resources, support each other. And there is the podcast in there as well. So people can get a lot of really cool information in there. So it's part of the attraction to come in and join, to so you can get that education and get that information.
That is pretty cool. So there is like tremendous amount of value delivered right away when you join the free community. Mick, I think that was an absolute masterpiece on how to do B2B podcast. The question we ask all our guests to wrap up this episode is, can you recommend us and our audience three podcasts, ideally B2B oriented, that you are listening to or that you would recommend, on top, obviously, of the Toolshed podcast?
Yeah. Well, my top three would be the Toolshed, the Toolshed, and the Toolshed.
Okay, what's the top six? And you cannot say the Toolshed again.
Funnily enough, the recommendations that I have probably going to be very useless to most people, but the main podcast, you know, I have listened to a bit of Joe Rogan, but not much. But the podcast that I listen to most is a podcast of a breakfast radio show in Melbourne, Australia, called The Marty Sheargold Show. And it's a radio show, but what they do is they do a live in the mornings, and then they do a podcast, and they call it the front end and the back end. They do a podcast, and then they have an edited version of their live show, and then they do the back end, and they are absolutely hilarious and irreverent, and the stuff they talk about is just crazy. I just listen to it and laugh, and I do that because, you know, I'm forever watching videos, listening to audiobook, business, everything about improving our business and helping others, and sometimes I just got to listen to dumb shit and laugh.
But that's important, and I think that's a very important lesson here.
Essential.
So the Marty Sheargold Show, I think I found it. Is it Marty like M-A-R-T-Y and then Sheargold, S-H-E-A-R-G-O-L-D, show. Awesome. So that's...
That's him. Bald guy with a beard.
Yeah, got him with the fancy moustache. Perfect. So I will put that link in the show notes. Any other ones that you listen to?
Funnily enough, I don't listen to a lot of podcasts.
The irony. Interesting.
People recommend podcasts. You know, if I listen to a podcast, it's with Marty. If I'm listening to anything else, it tends to be audiobook. You know, I think my favorite audiobook author is Mike Michalowicz.
Mike Michalowicz. Best book from him?
He's got 10. I think the best book is called Fix This Next, but he's also the author of Profit First. And I needed to say the Profit First one. The best book, or the book you read first, is Fix This Next. But for financial management of your business, it is a life changer. Profit First is absolutely life changing.
Perfect. We'll put the Marty Sheargold Show in the show notes, along with Fix This Next from, what's his name, so I don't butcher it?
Mike Michalowicz.
We'll put, you don't need the spelling, we'll put all the link in the show notes. Mick, thank you so much. It was absolutely great.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the B2B Podcast Stories. We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please don't forget to hit subscribe and check us out at ghamarketing.com. Have a great day.